Hello, and welcome to the America Magazine podcast. I'm Carrie Weber, managing editor of America Magazine. This week's guest is Elisabetta Piquet, who's been a correspondent in Italy and at the Vatican for La Nación, Argentina's main newspaper, since 1999. Born in Florence, Italy, she was educated and grew up in Argentina. She's earned a degree in political science and international relations from the Catholic University of Buenos Aires, and has reported on wars and conflicts in Afghanistan, Iraq, Kosovo, and the Middle East. Since Pope Francis's election, she has focused on his papacy, and she's known Pope Francis as Jorge Mario Bergoglio since 2001. She's also married to America's Vatican correspondent, Jared O'Connell. Her latest book is called Pope Francis, Life and Revolution, published by Loyola Press. Elisabetta, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you.
Now, one of the things that really differentiates your book from other books about Pope Francis is the fact that you know Pope Francis, and you knew Pope Francis long before he was Pope Francis. I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about how you first got to know him.
Yes, well, I first got to know him in February 2001. I am correspondent of La Nación newspaper from Argentina, the most important daily newspaper. And one day I got a telephone call from my paper saying, look, there is the Archbishop of Buenos Aires that is going to Rome because he will be created cardinal by John Paul II. And he normally doesn't give interviews, but he will do an exception. And they also told me, well, he normally doesn't give interviews and he's a Jesuit. I just knew these two things. And so that was my first meeting. I remember I phoned him. He was staying in the Casa del Clero of Via de las Crofa. That was this guest house for priests in Rome that became famous after his election, because the first day he went and paid. Do you remember?
Yes, yes.
I phoned him. He asked me if I could send by fax the questions, what I did. And then, well, we established a meeting. And when I met, really, it would be surprising for you, but now you see this Pope so mediatic, so media rock star. But he was almost shy. And I remember that to break the ice, I started telling him, look, the reality, I'm not an expert in church or Vatican matters. Yes, I cover it, but I also, and it's true, I also cover other things in the wars, Kosovo, a war correspondent. I was coming from Jerusalem, the Second Intifada. And anyway, I started doing the questions, and then he surprised me also that, you know, to cover the Vatican for a woman, and a woman journalist, is not so easy. And he, in that sense, was different. It wasn't the cardinal that would be very, you know, with a distance. He was simple. He started immediately impressing me with the answer he would give me, because they were very direct, very simple. And that, with my journalistic mind, I would say, They were all like sound bites or headlines, no? Each question very clear. But the most surprising thing was that almost maybe 4 days later, after this interview was published, I was in my house and I got a telephone call, and it was him saying, "Hello, this is Padre Bergoglio. I just wanted to thank you, to say thank you for the interview." And you know, it's not normal for a journalist to receive such a telephone call after an interview. If you receive a phone call, it's just, what did you write?
Right. It's more so likely to be a complaint.
That was the first approach. Then, well, each time he would come to Rome for some meetings or congregation, we would meet when I would go to Buenos Aires also. Then when in the conclave 2005, I was pregnant. And when I told him that I was expecting, you know, it was natural to immediately bless the kid I was carrying on. Then it was natural with my husband then to ask him, because then I had this kid in Buenos Aires, and to ask him to baptize the kid, and then when I had the other also. So he always was in that sense. For instance, I would cover one of the wars in Gaza in December, and he would phone Jerry and say, well, tell her that I'm praying for her. And it was like that. It was something that I would have never expected then, that he would become a pope and I would write this book, really.
Right, right. And that's something that he's become really famous for now, is making those phone calls, is making that personal connection, and in fact doing interviews. As you said, he's now known for being a very media savvy kind of person, for granting interviews, one that we published last fall. And what do you think has allowed him to kind of make that shift from being a somewhat shy person who didn't want to do a lot of interviews to being someone who seems very comfortable in the spotlight?
Well, he also spoke about that, you know, in one of these interviews that now he's also giving, you know, in the sky, coming back from trips I cover. And then he explained, well, I always thought that he felt like unsure. He thought that he would need more time, like, to reflect. He wasn't sure. But the reality, my experience also in that interview in 2001, he was great, because, as I told you, he knows very well. So now it's like, well, being Pope, you can see that he's very serene. He's a Jesuit. He thinks that if he's there, it's because God wants him there. And he's spontaneous. He's himself. And this is, I think, at the end, you know, when they ask me, which is the media strategy of the Pope? And the media strategy of the Pope is that he has no media strategy, that he's himself. And he's authentic, and that you can realize. But it's true that there was also a kind of transformation. And in the book, I have a chapter, Bergoglio and the Media. And for instance, a very famous Argentinian radio journalist, no? I was with him, and I quote him in Brazil. When he was in Brazil, you would see him, and he was so great in the communication with these 3 million young people in Brazil. And he would say, it's unbelievable, because I interview being our bishop quite a lot of times, but it's like his tone of voice, what he would say, it was interesting, but the tone was like almost boring, and I couldn't transmit these interviews, radio interviews with him. And so there is a kind of transformation also in that sense.
Right. It seems like, from what you're describing, almost an increasing trust in the Lord and an increasing sense of trust in that, as you said, God is putting him where he is meant to be, and that he has a responsibility, therefore, to sort of be himself in those situations.
Yes, of course. And in this sense, also doing this book is like, because, yes, I knew him since 2001, but for me it was a big challenge, because I didn't know. Yes, I knew that he was provincial, etc., but I dig in the past that I didn't know about him. I had an equipe of a team of researchers working with me, that I chose 3 women journalists. And it's like going back and having seen his life, he was always in very important position with big responsibility. First, like provincial of the Jesuit in very difficult times, then like auxiliary bishop, and then archbishop, always navigating, you know, in stormy weather, and being able, besides the difficulties, to go on. And so I am convinced, after doing this book, that bad or well, and of course not consciously, he was almost preparing, no, to be elected in a church that, of course, was and is, has to face a lot of, you know, of challenges, but here we have a man of government that knows how to navigate in these stormy periods, and that wants to a church that another Jesuit, Cardinal Martini, before dying said that a church that remained 200 behind our times. He is trying to, you know, to reconcile with the modern times, and in this sense, he is a new voice, and someone that is getting a church that was far away from people, you know, a church that is close to people.
Right. Now, in your own work, you mentioned that you have worked as a war correspondent. And I wonder if a lot of people might wonder, how does that relate to covering the Vatican and covering the Pope? How has your work as a war correspondent influenced how you've approached the way that you've written this book? Is there a connection?
Of course, there is a connection, because, and this is also, I think, a big difference between this book and other books. And it's a book written in a very, in not the ecclesiastical kind of language or kind of way to write a book. For a secular newspaper, I was covering a lot of different things, also political, not just wars, but kind of everything from the, you know, from the soccer football match of Maradona, you know, saying farewell to the football and, you know, the Venice Film Festival, you know. So it's written, I think it's written by someone that, by someone in that sense, not, you know, with the church or Vatican or way of describing, but someone that I think in this sense is written in a very agile way. Some say, well, it reads like a novel, and but it's not the typical, maybe boring, you know, bio of a pope.
Now, as you mentioned, it has a very narrative quality to it. There's a lot of description, a lot of detail. How did you go about reporting that and making sure that you were able to have the kind of detail that was necessary for the kind of writing and description you wanted to do?
Well, I as I told you before, I got this team of researchers that did a lot of interviews. Of course, I was directing them what to search. And at the end, you know, this book that you see, this book is like, I don't know, now 300 pages, but I got much more information. It was very difficult and I had to cut it down. I think in this sense also it's a big difference, because here you will find people that really knows the Pope and the schoolmate, the alumni when he was teacher, for instance, before becoming, you know, being ordained. He was teacher in this Colegio de la Inmaculada Concepción de Santa Fe. He was teaching literature and psychology, and you have a lot of, really, you get who is the Pope, because also he's someone that read a lot, that knew Borges, and that had a really, that is essential, this sense of humor, because he would, speaking with all these ex-students of the Pope, they are all still in contact with him, because it's like a group of people that remember how this, he was not still a priest, like young Jesuit would open their mind, and how he would conquer them with jokes, since the with this sense of humor and with this, you know, in a way, it changed also their lives to have this kind of teacher that would open really their minds.
Now, Pope Francis has received a lot of media coverage all across the whole world, and especially we've been really covering it a lot here in the U.S. What would you say is one thing, having known him, that the media is really getting right about Pope Francis? And what is one thing that you think maybe the media in general is not quite getting right, something that you think maybe needs redirection?
Well, I think the media, if the media is giving him a lot of attention, is because the media realizes that he has a message and has something to say, and has something to say that it's important, and has something to say that goes much beyond the Catholic Church. He's reaching far away, and maybe more, the non-Catholics. This is a Pope that is speaking about Christ and about the mercy of God. He's is speaking about the a dialogue culture. He's speaking against the throwaway culture that we see nowadays. He's speaking about, you know, the things, the terrible injustice that we see, the horrible gap between rich and poor that there are everywhere. And so he has become the voice of the people that has no voice. He's speaking out against, you know, armed trafficking, human being trafficking, mafia, the dictatorship of an economy without human face. It's the reality of this world. And he's speaking about how this throwaway culture, throwaway, not just the young people that, you know, jobless, and the young people are the future of a society, but also the old people that are the wisdom, the roots, and the memory of the society. And he says, if you throw away the young and the old, there is no future. So he's touching issues that goes beyond, you know, the Catholic Church. And so the media realize that this is this is a voice, and also they realize he's authentic, that he's not a fake leader, as we have so many fake leaders, and it's someone that really wants to change things. And so in this sense, the media is totally right to give him space. Then they see that he's authentic, because he's not just speaking, he's acting. he goes to the Holy Land, he organized, you know, the prayer with Abu Mazen, Shimon. He's a man of action. And if you see him on the general Wednesday audience, you know, he, even if it's cold, raining, very hot, he would spend 2 hours touching and caressing and consoling the poor of the poor, the sick people. So he's giving the example. And he's giving also the example when he says he doesn't want bishops that live like princes. Since the first day he didn't wear the, you know, the golden cross, and he has his silver cross, he has his old rotten black shoes and not the red shoes. And he decided not to live in the apostolic palace, but in the guest house of Santa Marta. So he is really an authentic, and they realize that. And this is a challenge, not just for the Catholic Church, it's a challenge for everybody.
Right. Now, knowing him, is there anything that the media is missing or misinterpreting?
Yeah, well, maybe, for instance, speaking about this synod, is misinterpreted. It has been a misinterpretation of what he's trying to do, and in this sense, he's a Jesuit that started a process being archbishop, and before he walked the street, he knows the reality, and he knows, he said it, that the family is in crisis. And we have to face the reality where there are families split, where divorced and remarried, families with gays that maybe they were excluded or discriminated by the church. So, and in this sense, the synod is, I think, a confirmation of this, what I call revolution of this Pope is doing, because a lot of issues that were taboos that nobody would dare to put on the table and discuss. He, with the synod, that is a synod for the first time in two phases, and it's a synod for the first time where there was freedom of expression, because he participated being cardinal and archbishop to other synod, and he saw that they were prefabricated synod where nobody could speak freely. So he asked, please speak free. And this is an open discussion. This also shows that he doesn't want to be, you know, the absolute monarch pope, but he wants to govern. And this also, well, with the group of 8 cardinals from over the world that assist him to reform the curia, he wants to listen not just what the bishop and the priest has to say, but also the lay people. And this is a process. We will have another synod in October 2015, and then he also said he knows he's the Pope, he will have the last word. And so the misinterpretation is that, you know, this Pope is confusing, and it's not confusing at all. He's just going back to the root of what is Christ and what is the gospel. And the gospel is about what he's saying every day. Include everyone, not to exclude, not to go there and condemn, yes, no, and to see the positive thing that there are in each of one of us, being divorced or remarried, gay or whatever. And this is a big change, because he wants a church with pastors with the smell of the sheep, and pastors that won't go and judge and condemn, but pastors to stay with and to stay and accompany the people, especially the wounded people.
Sure. Now let's go back to the conclave and to the moment when you heard that Jorge Mario Bergoglio was going to be the Pope. What was your personal reaction that this person that you had known was going to take on this role?
Well, in the eve of the conclave, I knew that, not like in the 2005 conclave where there was a big candidate that was Joseph Ratzinger. In this year, the candidates, they were speaking about Angelo Scola, the Italian, Scherer, the Brazilian, but Scherer was an operation to put, you know, the first Latin American pope, but it was an operation for, you know, the conservative sector of the curia that didn't want to change the statu quo. Then for the first time, there was also, as a serious candidate, an American, Cardinal Sean O'Malley from Boston. Then there was also, they were speaking about Ouellet, the Canadian. But the reality is that I knew that, he was known from the 2005 conclave. He was the second most voted after Benedict. And then he was also known between all the Latin American cardinals because of his role in Aparecida conference in 2007. He was the relator of the document of Aparecida, and he showed great ability to create consensus among all the bishops. And then, Another point that was essential, it was in the pre-conclave meetings, on March 7th, he gave a speech that then we knew. We knew afterwards a speech in that impressed a lot the cardinals. Was very brief, very, as always, direct, in which he said what he's saying since the first day, that a church closed in itself is a sick church, and that the church has to go out to the peripheries of the world, and the periphery is not Japan or whatever is around your corner. And so I knew that he would enter in the conclave with a package of 30 votes. That was a lot. And that there was nobody convinced the other candidates. Cola, yes, it was Italian. The Italians were the larger number of cardinals, but they were divided about him. And so for me, it was, of course, I was shocked anyway, because of course I knew it was a possibility, but so I remember when we were after the white smoke, and there was 1 hour that we had waiting, and so knowing that the announce is in Latin, I was thinking, well, Jorge in Latin, Georgius, to be ready to listen. And when I said Georgius Marius, it was like, you know, it was really shocking. And then seeing him coming out dressed in white, you can imagine, no?
Oh my gosh, I can imagine. Were you nervous writing about your friend in a book in this very public
way? Of course, it was very challenging. It was a big challenge. I had my doubts when I was asked by this important publishing house in Argentina to write, but I thought that I had to do it. And then it was quite difficult because I did it and I was working also and being mother. So I still don't know how I did it, really. But I did it and I'm happy because really a lot of people close to him and like Rabbi Abraham Skorka, you know, he was in my presentation in Argentina, in my presentation of the book in Rome in Italian. And he would say publicly, with this book, I discovered things about my friend that I didn't know. And then also publicly, you know, the director of the Osservatore Romano, Giovanni Maria Vian, when I was in the touring book fair in another presentation, he said publicly, well, of the more than 100 books written about the Pope, this is the best. And also this old Jesuit that I met in Argentina also, well, this reads like a novel, and this is really, you got the man. A lot of people tell me, you got really the portrait, the real portrait of the man.
That real essence of him.
Yes, a man of government, a man of God, and a free man. He never studied in Rome, he had discovered the curial mentality, and a man that knows very well where to go, and always listening, as he said at the end of the synod, the sign of the time and what God wants from us.
Now, have you given a copy of the book to Pope Francis?
Of course.
And has he read it? Has he given you his own reaction?
Well, he read it and, of course, he liked.
Well, that's good, right? That's probably one of the most important endorsements. Very good. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.